Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Mugwump Tower, this is Albatross 1-3, requesting permission to land. Over.
I don't need a computer to tell me how to land a damn airplane.
6.
Heads-up display, check.
5.
Lasers, check.
4.
Particle beam, check.
3.
Photon bolts, check.
2.
Chair control, check.
1.
Let's do it.
Broadcasting from a secret underground location somewhere in Mos Eisley, this is the Docking Bay 77 podcast. Make yourself comfortable. The show is about to start. Hello and welcome to the Docking Bay 77 podcast. I am your host, Dayton Johnson. Well, we've officially gotten past Christmas and it's officially winter. So I've invited a couple of wizards over to discuss an album that is very popular at this time of year. So first, please welcome a guy who doesn't even like the sound of the word snow, Tim Brown. How's it going, Tim?
Ho, ho, ho! My rockin' Santa.
Rockin' Santa. Yeah. I love it. All right, very cool. And welcome a guy whose house is all lit up this night, Electric Blue. Hello, John.
Hello, and I'm not going to sing. I'm like Tim.
I think we're all a little better
Wamp.
Off. You know,
yeah, we are. We really
don't,
are.
We definitely don't want to hear me sing because we know how that's going to turn out. So, all right. So before we get into the episode, I actually do have a recent Apple podcast review from a new listener. It was from November 14th of 2022, of course. It's the handle is BP122334. It's got to be fake or made up. I don't care. But anyway, he gave us 5 stars, entertaining and informative. Came across this show on the Vintage Video Discord and have been delighted with the insights and humor. I particularly like the top lists. Keep up the good work. That makes me happy. And we love to hear from our listeners, and we definitely love 5-star reviews and ratings. So if you rate or review us on one of your apps, let us know, because we don't always get notifications that we have a new review or rating. And we will happily read it on one of the upcoming episodes. So reach out and slap us, whatever. It's all good. So, as many people know, this time of year, Trans-Siberian Orchestra is one of the more popular acts, especially touring and their music as well. So, and last year, Tim and I talked about one of the records. So, again, we're going to visit that artist and we're going to talk about the album, The Lost Christmas Eve.
The story continues. Trans-Siberian Orchestra's The Lost Christmas Eve, presented by Hallmark Channel, coming soon to a city near you. New stage, all new show. Don't miss the debut of Trans-Siberian Orchestra's The Lost Christmas Eve, live in concert. On tour across America and coming soon to a city near you. A rock holiday tradition for a new generation. A fusion of rock with the majesty of classical. TSOtickets.com for tour details. A new tradition for the holiday season. Trans-Siberian Orchestra's The Lost Christmas Eve. Pick up the new album at Amazon.com.
Now, Tim has got a little bit of production history on the album, what he could find. So what have you got for us, Tim?
Okay, well, the album was recorded during 2003 and 2004 while the band was not on the road. It was recorded at Soundtracks Recording Studio in New York, produced by Paul O'Neill and Robert Kinkle, engineered by Dave Whitman, released on October 12th of 2004, and it went gold after 5 weeks and was certified double platinum in March of 2013.
There is actually a story that goes along with this one, like most of their albums do. So, John, what can you tell us about the story that goes along with this one?
First of all, it's a very long and complicated story, but to
yes, it is.
To get it down to a nutshell, because otherwise this is going to be a multi-part episode, it focuses on God's littlest angel, who is once again called upon by God to travel to Earth and find God, the name of one man who is carrying on the work of his son. Unlike previous trips to Earth, this time the angel can only use his wings twice when he ascends to or descends to Earth and ascends back to heaven. So he chooses New York City to travel to. While in New York City, he encounters many people, different stories. He encounters a man telling stories outside of a hotel, enthralling children, which kind of reminds him of Christ and his parables. He overhears music being played, which always reminds him of God. Stumbles into a bar where a famous blues musician who claims to have taught Cab Calloway everything they know is playing. While there, he notices the soul of a man who leaves and leaves a pile of blood from his soul, not visible to anyone else. And long story short, the angel learns that the man is a father that abandoned his son, who was born on Christmas and the son's mother died. Through a series of events, the man changes his heart and decides to look up his son and finds him in the hospital that he abandoned him at several years later. The son is grown, is unable to speak, but spends all his time caring for the orphaned children from whatever reason. The man's touched by this, kind of reignites his thoughts and spirit and love of Christmas, reunites with his son, decides to quit his job and get a job at the hospital. And this is the catalyst that sends the littlest angel back to God to report on just how many people are indeed carrying on the work of his son on the earth.
Yeah. There actually is a narrated version of the record.
I just learned that, by the way.
And on Spotify, when I was listening to it, going through track by track, a couple of times, like if you click on the lyrics, it'll actually show you the narration. It won't play it for you, but it'll show you the narration so you can read along. It's interesting because when I went to go read about it, I'm like, man, this is a very long story. It's a lot longer than the one we did last year. So
yes,
a lot more going on.
By a lot.
And I will say that this is definitely an album that requires narration to tell the story.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I got a bit when I was going through it and I'm like, I got kind of lost and I'm like, what did I miss? So yes, the narration makes a big difference, and knowing what the story is about does make a big difference. So, all right. Thank you, John. So let's before we get into track by track, let's talk some thoughts, feelings, and opinions about this album. So Tim, initial thoughts.
Well, I kind of have to start off with apology for last year's episode, because I listened back to that recently and we kind of bagged on the vocals a lot on that other album.
Yeah.
And listening back to it, man, we sounded really harsh. So I want to go on record as saying, TSO, I'm sorry. it wasn't as bad as I made it sound. I was a little harsh, but what it kind of, my thought when I was listening to this one now was it kind of crystallized in my mind that, you know how when you listen to a musical soundtrack, like a Broadway soundtrack or another musical production, it never really, even if it's recorded spectacularly and all the performances are really on point, it really never sounds as good as seeing it live. And TSO's kind of in that same category for me. You know, they're not meant to just be heard. It's meant to be heard and seen. There's a visual element that you don't get with the album listen that I think really adds a lot to their performances.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I will admit that one of the things I do very much like about this album is that almost half the tracks are instrumentals, so that that helps. And but a couple of my favorite songs actually do have lyrics. So mm-hmm. And one thing, it's funny how this album's put together. I know it's telling a story, so I know there's a flow to that, but the album starts off really, really strong, the middle is good, and then the end of it just is kind of like blah. And so it's definitely not quite as strong as the last one. And I really noticed the use of the word snow over and over again, and not necessarily in a bad way, because I like how it's using that as a storytelling piece, because it usually talks about kids playing in it, or how it's muffling the sounds, how the light's reflecting off it. So it's using it as a storytelling piece, and I did enjoy that very much so. In fact, the title track mentions it at least three separate times, and the snow comes down and muffles the sound, and then there's even a song called Wisdom of Snow. And so John, thoughts, feelings, opinions.
Kind of like Tim said, this group of musicians deserve to be seen live, and that's where they are the strongest. Primarily because a lot of times the guys you hear singing are not the ones on the album. And unfortunately, the vocals on this, it might just be me, but my wife said it too. One guy sounds like Jack Skellington, aka Danny Elfman. The other guy sounds like Oogie Boogie.
Wow. Not the reaction my wife had. She asked me if one of the songs was Meatloaf.
You know what? I can hear that too.
Yeah. And they're not bad. I don't mean to, I don't say that in a negative way by any stretch of the imagination, but having seen a performance of, I believe it was this particular album live, when you have the different singers singing the songs, it's just better. It's really kind of crappy of me to say, because there is an extreme amount of talent on this album. There always is.
Right.
Well, it's like what I was saying a minute ago. I think there's more to them than just the music. There, if you don't have that visual element and that live element, I think the music kind of suffers from it overall.
Well, and in this one in particular, with, like I said earlier, I just learned that there's a narrated version of this. And I think that's where this album really suffers from, because you're listening, it's a concept album, but when half the concept album has no lyrics, it's really hard to follow the flipping story.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. That's why I'm like, how is this song, or how is this story this long and this detailed, when, over 30 minutes of this over hour long album is just instrumental?
Yeah, I agree. All right, so before we go ahead and do the track by track, Tim has some information on the musicians that played on the record, and also where they went to and came from and all that kind of fun stuff. So, all right, Tim, what you got for us?
Well, you had asked me, when I was originally researching the production history on this album, there wasn't really a whole lot of detail about it, just the facts that I gave a couple of minutes ago. And I almost laughed when you said, hey, why don't you just go through some of the members and talk about all the other bands that they've played with? And I was like, are you kidding me? This is going to take all night. There have been a lot of musicians in and out of this band and its varying touring entities over the year. And there are actually two separate versions of the group to tour on each coast, each holiday season. And the number of vocalists they've had is just staggering. And they have had more than their fair share of guitarists.
Right.
And all of those people have in turn worked with other people in the music industry, to the point where you can almost start playing some sort of strange 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with TSO members.
I was just going to ask if you could get one of them to Kevin Bacon, I'll give you a dollar.
You got the guys that have been with Sabotage and TSO.
Right.
And I almost have to, you might have to like double speed this when you're editing, because you got Chris Caffery, Al Petrelli, who's also worked with Alice Cooper, Megadeth, Asia. And his first big gig was Michael Bolton.
Yeah. Well, at least your name isn't Michael Bolton.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that name.
There was nothing wrong with it until I was about 12 years old and that no-talent ass clown became famous and started winning Grammys.
He says this was back when Michael Bolton was still trying to be Sammy Hagar and not Engelbert Humperdinck. Then you got Alex Skolnick, who was in Sabotage and TSO, and he was also in Testament and Metal Allegiance, and he also played with Ozzy, and he's known for his jazz work, and he has a popular YouTube channel. Johnny Lee Middleton, the bass player for both Sabotage and TSO, Jeff Plate, drummer, Sabotage and TSO, Robert Kinkle, keyboards in both bands, Zach Stevens was the second singer in Sabotage after John Oliva, and he toured with TSO. Then you got John Oliva, who, you know, he was in Sabotage and there when they wrote Christmas Eve Sarajevo, and he recorded early on with TSO, but I don't really find any record of him actually touring with them at any point.
Yeah, I don't think he does.
Then you've got just the guys that have toured with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and they've been in tons of other projects. There's Joel Hoekstra, who was on Broadway as the lead guitarist for Rock of Ages. He toured with Cher. He did a few albums with Night Ranger. He's in the current version of Whitesnake. He was on one of Amy Lee's solo albums, Outside of Evanescence. He did an album with Michael Sweet of Stryper, played with Dee Snider. The guy's just been everywhere.
Nice.
Russell Allen, who was in Symphony X and Adrenaline Mob with Mike Portnoy of right. Dream Theater and the Winery Dogs. There was a Broadway guy named Jeff Evans who did a lot, who was in Little Shop of Horrors, South Pacific, Les Mis, Jesus Christ Superstar. Caleb Johnson was the winner of season 13 of American Idol. He tours with them regularly. Jeff Scott Soto
right.
was on Yngwie's Rising Force. He was the voice on the soundtrack for the movie Rockstar. He's performed with Brian May. He was in Journey for a year. Now he's in Sons of Apollo with Mike Portnoy, who was in Adrenaline Mob with Russell Allen, who is also a singer for Trans-Siberian Orchestra. So you can see how their lineup just gets so confusing so quickly. it's unbelievable, the pedigree of this band.
Yes, let's not forget that Billy Sheehan is also in Sons of Apollo with Portnoy, and you know, and also with David Lee Roth, and you know, and all over the place.
Mr. Big.
The touring members and the, you know, the musicians definitely have crossed paths with a lot of other musicians and bands. So,
yeah, I mean, at this point, if you say you were in TSO, I just have to take your word for it.
Sweet. Hey, Tim, I was in TSO.
Nice.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Let's get into track by track. So the first track, the instrumental, Faith Noel. I like the rock and roll treatment of the song. That I'm not usually a fan of the first Noel, so I kind of like what they did with it. It's a good opener. What do you think, Tim?
I think it's a strong opener for the album, and it's exactly what you expect to hear from these guys.
Right? John?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. It sets the mood. It reminds me, you know, we talked about earlier about this kind of sounding like a Broadway production. And having seen, you know, been fortunate enough to see Phantom of the Opera a few years ago, it's not uncommon to have like the orchestra playing as you're walking into the theater,
right?
And kind of setting the mood. And that's what this does very, very well. I mean, I can picture it, you know, a crowd dressed up to go to the symphony or to a play that night, walking into the theater. And this is playing as they're getting ready to watch the story of the last Christmas
Eve. Right. Yeah. That ties in with something that we mentioned on last year's episode where, Paul O'Neill really originally envisioned a lot of this as a Broadway musical,
right?
In this rock style. And even though the TSO live show doesn't really go that far, there's still very definitely a lot of these choreographed, staged, well blocked moments for each song. And it's like you said, this is when you could see them, you know, coming onto stage and we're getting introduced to the characters and blah, blah, blah with all right. that. And I actually feel like that a lot of the shorter instrumental pieces on this album, even though they don't go that far with their actual stage production, I can see where originally as intended, these were probably going to be those set pieces where we're yep. changing from one scene to another.
Yeah. They're scene yep. changes. Yeah. It's yep. Yeah, exactly. No, it's so people can, would be able to change costumes or move set pieces around. So yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. All right. The title track, Lost Christmas Eve. John, what do you think about this one?
I really like this one. This is actually one of the favorite ones on the album, because again, it's another one, like you said, the album starts off so strong.
Yeah, it does.
And it sets the mood, and you're starting to get, again, this is the narration. This would be what the narrator of the play is telling you is going on. Musicianship, again, there is a lot on this album I don't like, but I will never knock the level of musicianship
right.
in this group.
Agreed.
And, you know, this is another one. I mean, this is the one of the ones this is one of my four. You asked us originally to pick top four, and this is one of the ones that would fall into my four.
Circumstance caught in this childhood dance as the world turns around, keeping dreams off the ground. Windows of frosted ice, prisming candlelight, and somehow we start to believe in the night and the dream as it cuts through the noise, with the whisper of snow as it starts to deploy in the depths of a night that's about to begin, with the feeling of snow as it melts on your skin and it covers the land with a dream so intense that it returns us all to a child's innocence, and then what you thought lost and could never retrieve is suddenly there to be found on Christmas Eve.
All right, cool. How about you, Tim?
Well, you know, I was originally going to go back to my old criticisms of the vocal pieces, but for me, you know, this one works.
Yes.
This is the one that we were listening to, and my wife asked me, "Is this Meatloaf singing?" And she didn't mean that like as a Meatloaf, you know, and making a joke out of it. We both really like Meatloaf. I think he was a great singer, and it got me to thinking, you know, there really is kind of this Meatloaf theatrical, almost kind of over the topness to it.
Yeah,
but that's kind of who TSO is, and so, you know, I kind of lean into it now, and you know, it's one of those things, either you like it or you don't, and I like it.
All right. Yeah. Side note, I'm going to bring up Anthrax real quick, because Meatloaf is Scott Ian's father-in-law, for those who don't know. So because, you know, we love Anthrax, and I have to mention them whenever I can. This song, I do enjoy the lyrical picture it paints. It is definitely, as far as, it's a good way to start the narrative of the story. I will admit that the little kid whispers are a little unsettling at times.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm glad I wasn't the only one.
It's the sibilance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little like, when I was walking at work, I actually looked behind me to see if, what the hell is that? I will say,
you
I don't
see the two kids from the Shining.
And you're right. I don't love the song. I do like it. There is definitely some pretty strong guitar work on this track for sure. I do feel like maybe it's just a tad long, but
yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. There's a couple of songs on here. Well, not a couple. There's a few songs on here that just to me feel longer than they need to be. And I will mention this when we get there. One of my four songs is the next track, Christmas Dream. It's a great follow-up to the last one. I like how it kind of starts quiet with the piano and then really does lean in the rock guitar. The music and lyrics are very good and they get your attention. It is a very good length. It's not too short, not too long. And we have another snow reference. It describes literally where snow comes from.
And a tear falls upon snow white hair, and it runs to the where it lingers there, then it falls through the air of a winter sky, till it captures a dream and it's crystallized. Let it go, let it go. It's a world that I know. For soon everything.
And it's basically describing where snowflakes come from, where snow comes from. And I love the description of, you know, hey, you know, this stuff is coming from people that, you know, whether it be a dream, whether it be a sadness or whatever, an emotion, that they came up with this idea of where the snow is coming from. So that's one of the reasons I really, really dig this song. What do you think, Tim?
Really, my only note on this song was it's not my favorite song on the album, but it is far from the worst.
Okay. All right. All right, John, what do you have to say?
This is another one of my favorites. I really like the lyrics to this song.
And yeah.
You know, I've said before on other episodes, you've had me on for music, if you can hook me in with lyrics, then you've done your job. If you don't have a the fundamentals down of storytelling. And yes, there are too many references to snow.
I didn't say there's too many.
There's too many. Let's be
all honest. Right, whatever.
But you know, that is what it is. It's winter. We all get it. But yeah,
they are a little ham-fisted with the imagery and places.
Yeah, it's like okay, let's throw the dart and what's snow again? Damn it. All right.
We need another dart player.
Right?
But yeah, this was another one of my favorites. I really enjoy this song. It's one of the better songs on the album, in my opinion.
All right. Yeah, I agree. Okay. So, the next track is probably the most popular by far of the entire album, Wizards in Winter. So, I mean, and for good reason, cause it's a friggin' awesome song.
Yes.
The arrangement is good because it never overdoes a musical piece. It takes it carries the same musical theme all the way through, but it does it differently. It slows it down. It changes the tone. I mean, but man, the one thing I really like about the song is that I listen to it and I feel like I'm moving. The way the song goes, the notes, the way it's written, I just get nothing but motion, you know, swirling, you know, swaying back and forth. And since there's nothing to sing along to, my brain just kind of like is just going with the music. So, yeah, Tim, what do you think?
Well, boys, this one's just a good old fashioned toe tapper to me. I mean, this great track. I'll say this about the track. If I ever needed a lesson in how much ability I've lost over the years on guitar, trying to play the main lick in this song,
right,
delivered me a very, very painful reminder. You got to have calluses to do those kind of pull-offs, fun, and I don't these days, and wow, does it hurt.
All right, John.
Again, like you, that this is it's motion. I mean,
yes,
this was made probably, most people probably first heard this in one of those viral videos of the synchronized lights on YouTube. And that's what pops into my head every time I see this. I can close my eyes and I can watch the lights move in sync to this song.
Yeah.
You know,
well, if you listen to it on Spotify, they actually have the little video clip from that guy's house.
Gotcha. I didn't know that. You know, and plus it's been used in a ton of commercials. I think it was used in like a pickup truck commercial not that long ago, you know, but it's very cool. I mean, this is the one, this is always like the highlight of their live performance. This is the one that they just go balls out. All the pyro goes off, all the lasers are flashing, people are flying around, you know, it's nuts. But again, it ties into that motion. It's what it, for an instrumental especially, this is the one that, you know, like Tim said, I hate to quote Tim, I'm going to, this is a real toe tapper.
Okay, that's not going to be reused. I'm not going along with that. All right.
Oh, that's going on the highlight reel.
Yes, it is.
All right. The next track, Remember. Now, I mentioned this in the previous episode. I really enjoy how they love to layer different parts of songs. And this is our first example. Now, granted, they do it lyrically because it is a choir piece for the most part. By the end of the song, there are six different vocal parts going. Mm-hmm. And the music doesn't change pretty much at all. It's just all the vocals. And so with this song, they kind of set up later songs to do the same thing musically. But, you know, it's for what it is, it's fine. It's enjoyable. So what do you think, Tim?
You know, for me, this kind of starts a string of meh tracks for me.
Okay.
I feel like this section of the album kind of drags and it doesn't grab me the way other stuff on here does. I like the building of the vocal parts from an arranger's viewpoint. You know, the choir stacking the vocals, bringing in more pieces. It's interesting from that perspective, but overall, this one's just kind of there for me.
All right, John.
Kind of in the same boat as Tim, and I'll just add that it tends to drag on a little long. It gets really repetitive towards the end, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I know they're doing it for emphasis, and I understand the artistic merit and stuff in that, but for me, it's not one that if I'm listening to this and having listened to this a few times to get ready for this. After the first couple of listens, this is one gets skip.
All right. Well, I'm guessing the next track, Anno Domini, is probably the same opinion from both of you. It's very choir heavy, and it's fine. You know, since I tried to listen to the whole record all the way through multiple times, I didn't skip it. I would not add this to my top TSO songs playlists. But yeah, in the context of the album, it's fine. What do you say, Tim?
Yeah, I agree. It's another meh for me. I think this one and Remember would probably be more impressive live with the singers on stage. I feel like this kind of illustrates the point I was making earlier about, you know, if you're listening to the soundtrack of a show, even if the soundtrack is done very, very well, it's still just not quite as good as it is live.
Gotcha. John?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think live it would probably work a lot better. For the album, it kind of, I don't know, it slows things down a little too much.
Right.
And it's I don't know. It's weird because there's no music in it. It's all choir, and it just doesn't quite work for me.
All right. So I'm kind of curious about the next one, Christmas Concerto. To me, it's kind of, it's just a pit stop. You know, we've had three songs in a row that kind of don't do much, I think, for the story. And, at least one of these probably could have gone away. What do you say, John?
Yeah, I'm again, this is going to be a really short podcast. None of us are disagreeing.
I'm sure we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. I'll just start disagreeing with Tim on principle if I have to. but this is a pit stop. It's, again, we've reached that part of the album, unfortunately, where they've hit a lull, and the lull's gone on a little bit longer than I would like. It's not bad. These all seem like, we mentioned it earlier, these all seem like transitional, like moving the set around pieces. Let's set up for the next scene type stuff.
Right. All right, Tim, thoughts?
Yeah, I my initial comment when I was writing my notes was, what is this even doing on a TSO album? It doesn't sound like TSO. It doesn't sound like anything else on the album.
Right.
I agree. It does feel like they're, you know, this is part of a montage scene. They're trying to give us lots of glimpses of things happening in different places around the city on Christmas Eve. But as a standalone piece, this just does not work for me at all.
Next track, Queen of the Winter Night. Now, this is one of my other favorites. It's a reworking of Mozart's The Magic Flute, in case you're paying attention. So I love the arrangement. I really enjoy the call and response between the music and the vocals. Now, there is a vocal bit in here that reminds me of the movie The Fifth Element. And right now you're thinking, what the hell are you talking about?
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's in my comments too.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's when the diva's performing and she gets up there, there's a piece that she does. And I'm like, it sounds very much like this.
It's so bad.
I disagree. I love this song.
No. Okay, finish your comment. I'm going to get to my comments on it. I will explain what I'm saying.
Okay, this is a really good example as the overlapping parts I mentioned before. Right around 1 minute 55, you can listen to the song as it progresses, and it keeps adding parts that are different, and they layer really well. By the end of the song, there's five different pieces complementing each other, and I love that. Love it. This is, like I said, one of my four favorites on the record. So, all right. I think I'll let John go before we let Tim poo-poo on everything.
What makes you think I'm not going to poo-poo on this?
Well, go right ahead.
No, I'm not going to totally poo-poo on it. I do like some other stuff where they layer stuff. Sometimes I think it gets to be, it treads a very fine line of being really cool and being a little too much. They walk it well, but I do get, I get over the call and response between the singer and the guitar pretty early on. And it gets to a point I'm like, okay, let's do something else, please. Please, let's do something else. Okay, that's impressive. Okay, let's do something else.
Jeez.
I just, wow. I don't know.
I'm defending this song. This is weird. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably, and I never realized the Fifth Element tie until you mentioned it. And that's probably where it's coming from, because while that's a cool scene in the movie, it kind of annoys me at the same time.
Great. I probably just ruined the song for thousands of people. They're going to go, oh my God. Now they're going to get the diva in their head.
Tim and I will ruin at least one more for a couple more thousand people. So,
all right. All right, Tim, what say you?
Okay. I'm going to start off with, this song is actually in my top four. This is one of my favorite songs on the album, but it has one little thing that is the thing I hate the most on this album. Why, with all of the wonderful female vocalists they've taken on tour with them over the years, did they pick the most 8-bit Casio garbage vocal sample they could find?
Money.
Like, was this like a placeholder thing, and somebody got all the way through the mastering process and said, oh crap, we forgot to replace that with the real singer. Oh my God. It's so annoying. The rest of the track I love. I jam it, you know, I crank it up when it comes on. But yeah, that part just assails me.
All right. That's fair. All right. We are next track, Christmas Night in Blue. Tim, thoughts?
I kind of dig this one. It's bluesy. Yes, me too. It's kind of got that kind of smoky kind of rock. I mean, I don't really have much to say about it, but yeah, that's a good tune.
Yeah, this is actually one of my other favorites. This is one of the few tracks where I really think the vocals, the voice itself works mm-hmm. very well with the feel and the theme of the song. So,
just another night in New York City. Snow comes down, looks real pretty. Don't know how, but suddenly there you are with Jelly Roll Morton playing for the bar. Inside here, lights are low, but each song has its own glow. As he floats them through that smoky air, we just can't believe he's really there. How old is he? Cannot say. The claims he taught Cal Calloway. And on this night,
you know, we mentioned the Jelly Roll Morton and Cab Calloway thing earlier, and we have, you know, another Snow reference, especially calling it Pure Salvation. It does a really good job selling me on the image of the bar and the streets outside, and there's a lot of really good piano in this track too. So John, thoughts?
I'll echo pretty much everything you said. Again, it does a really good job of painting a picture. It's fun. It's a little bit different than what you would expect on a TSO album. Doesn't really even sound like them at all. You could play this to someone and they would probably have a heart. If they've never heard this album, they wouldn't know it's TSO.
Right.
But it's fun. It's not in my top four, but it's definitely one I don't skip.
Yeah. All right. Next track is an instrumental piece called Christmas Jazz. Tim, thoughts?
I really like this one. This one's in my top four for the album.
I had to make one of yours guitar work.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, just really solid guitar work. Nice acoustic piece. I can't say anything bad about this one. There are no bad Casio samples here.
John?
Yeah, this is another one that made my favorites.
All right.
This is really cool because, again, it's different, but it works within the concept of the story. Right. And it's, again, it's the guitar work and stuff. It's beautiful. It's incredible. I mean, this goes to show you, TSO is known for flash and pull-offs and all this stuff, and this shows you that they don't need that. The musicians on this album don't have to hide behind flash.
You want talented. About overproduced and effects laden stuff. These boys can just sit down and play.
Next track, Christmas Jam. Cool riff. I do like the use of the bells to give it the Christmas feel. Nice guitar work in general. And it's actually one of the few actual guitar solos on most of the tracks. So I do like that. Tim,
you know, with Christmas Jazz right before this one and then that little spoken bit right at the start, it makes me expect something totally different than what the song actually is when it starts. So to me, it feels kind of off. Like, I'm like, huh, what happened there?
Okay.
But otherwise, I mean, this is exactly what I come to TSO for. This is a good solid track.
All right, John.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's a quintessential TSO track. You'd expect to see this live. You'd expect to hear this live. And this is exact. Once you explain to someone what TSO is, this is probably what they would expect to hear.
All right. Very good. Next track, another instrumental, Siberian Sleigh Ride. Very, very cool instrumental. You know, I wish my sleigh rides had music like this. That'd be a lot more fun. But it's a fun song. This is more what I expect to hear from them. And like I said before, I like the fact that there's a lot of instrumentals on here, and I would probably put this one on a TSO playlist. It didn't make my top four, but it's a good track. What do you think, Tim?
This one did make my top four, and okay. It is another solid, quote unquote, this is what TSO is about kind of tune. There's a little bit here and there that almost reminds me of a David Lee Roth Band era song, and I can't remember which one. I want to say maybe just like Feels Like Paradise.
Okay.
It's a very 80s sound in a very good way. I like it a lot.
Right.
This one's in my top four.
All right, John.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Tim said. It captures a little bit of the 80s sound in a very cool way. And let's face it, we all rag on the 80s, but all three of us lived through it, and some of our favorite music came out of that decade. So
very true.
Yeah, it's another one that you would expect out of a band like TSO.
All right. Next track, What is Christmas? Tim, what do you have to say about this one?
This one, a part of me really likes this song.
All right.
But I also feel like this track fails at what it's trying to do in the album. You know, it's supposed to be from the viewpoint of our character who hates Christmas. He's our Scrooge. He's our Grinch. So I think they missed an opportunity to really lean into that character with the music.
Right.
And instead they just kind of played it straight. And so the mean guy parts just, they feel flat to me. Like, I feel like they should have done something a little more tongue in cheek or sarcastic with the music, play something kind of intentionally off to kind of lean into that character of the guy that hates this Christmas thing. And the music is kind of falling apart as a result of it. And, you know, of all the places to have a perfectly executed, well-performed, tight piece of music, this wasn't it. I think it just kind of fails at what it was supposed to be.
Right. And, you know, snow, he doesn't like the sound of it. Yeah, this one is not...
Yeah.
I don't like his voice. It doesn't work for me.
That little piece you talked about right there, the snow, I don't even like that whole segment right there could have worked if the music around it wasn't this.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. John?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I like it, but I don't like it at the same time. And getting back to what Tim said, it kind of, some of the comments of what he said, there's a great song by Alice Cooper called The Song That Doesn't Rhyme. And in there, like, he's got a line that says, the drummer's always out of time. And when he mentions the line, Eric Singer, who's the drummer for that album, actually plays out of time. And TSO could have done something like that with his character. It could have been, I don't know how you play sarcastically, Tim. You'll have to teach me.
I don't know.
I can be sarcastic and play, but I can't.
You know, he's singing "What Is Christmas," da, 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 and the music is bum 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 bum.
Yeah,
bum. I would have liked a little some sloppiness, like the musicians are looking at each other, like what are we doing? This guy doesn't like us. You know, there's something to give us this feeling that the music and the vocal here just don't mesh together.
The music is too happy to go on the lyrics that aren't.
There we go. That's
right.
And Tim's idea would work really well live. I don't think it'll work on a recorded album though, because you're gonna miss the nuances of the people looking at it one another, like, what the hell's going on here? You're not gonna get that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
All right. Next track, For the Sake of Our Brother. Nope. That's all I'm going to say about this one, Tim.
It's another meh for me.
Yeah. All right. John.
Yeah, this is a meh. It just doesn't do it for me.
All right. The Wisdom of Snow. It's fine. You know, its only purpose to me is to connect the last song and then the next song. There's really no other purpose I can find for this to be here. So
I mean, but it does give us a very important 155th reference to snow.
See? <I'm> just
I John? Mean, it's a nice piano piece, but it's nothing I seek out when I play the album.
Right. All right, John?
Yeah. Agreed. It's meh. It serves its purpose. It does it well, but it's not by far not a standout track.
All right. Next
I feel
track.
Like we should tell people, you know, we do like this.
There's
this is a very long album, and there is some filler.
Yeah. See, like I said, at this point, you know, there's one more song, and then to me, the rest of the album is kind of like whatever. So the next track, Wishlist Toy Shop Madness. It's a reworking of the Hungarian Rhapsody, number 2 by Franz Liszt. I really enjoyed this song. It's a great combination of classical and rock. It does it very well. But because of the song, it's reworking. I keep getting the images of Tom and Jerry in my head because there is a cartoon where Tom and Jerry, or, you know, Tom's playing the song, and, you know, yeah, no matter what, the images of Tom and Jerry get into my head when I hear the song. I really do like the song. The tail end of it has some really, really good guitar work in it. In fact, but yeah, like I said, after this, the rest of the album kind of, anyway. So John, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree. It's got that cartoony imagery that pops into your head when you hear it, you know. It's good. It's another one that serves its purpose. And to save us from this, it sounds like we're crapping all over this album, like Tim said, and I'm not. It's just
right.
They have, in my opinion, TSO has two other releases that are much stronger than this one. But, you know, that being said, again, I'm not going to shit on these guys' musical ability,
right?
Because I'll never reach that level. I know three chords and they're all wrong. you know, but
yeah, didn't I teach you those chords?
That's why they're all wrong. But no, you're right. The fact is, I like the band. I like a lot of songs on here. But the album is over an hour long, and there's 24 tracks, and not all of them are gems. So it regardless of, we're going to have a fair amount of ones we just don't like. So, and that's going to happen when you have that many tracks and over an hour's worth of music. So,
well, and also this is their third release, and it's their third Christmas release, excuse me. So it's like, all right, we got the Christmas thing down, and I know they've done other stuff, but
yeah, but it's the Christmas ones that sell. The other ones don't sell nearly as much. It is the Christmas
ones that sell, that, and God bless them for it. And at the same time, I'm saying, you know, I'm a little burned out on the Christmas stuff. I do think it's time that they get up off their backsides and probably do another Christmas album. But it's probably not going to happen.
Well, yeah, with Paul O'Neill's death, I don't think it's going to happen either. So, all right. So, Tim, wish list, what do you think?
I'll keep this short. This one is in my top four. It's a killer track. And this is yet another example of exactly what we come to see TSO for.
Yep. All right. Well put. All right. Next track, Back to a Reason, part two. It's part two because this is apparently a sequel to a Sabotage song of the same name from their 2001 album, Poets and Madmen. And this is where the album loses me. I don't know. I just don't. This song kind of loses me. I don't care for it almost at all. So, Tim?
I don't hate the back end of this album as much as you, but if I'm going to try and guess why you don't like it as much, it's something we just said. This album is over an hour long, and I think by this point, you're kind of just getting fatigue from them.
Well, I think my biggest issue is the energy is gone. The energy is gone at this point.
Yeah. Now, see, I had for my notes on this was that this is where the story takes a turn to kind of start sending it home, where we start coming to the conclusion, the big happy ending of the whole story. This is a good track, but it's not my favorite. To me, it does have kind of an old school Sabotage feel to it, though, which I applaud them for.
Right.
Yep.
All right, John.
Yeah, I like this song. All right. I'm a sucker for ballads. I think it's a decent ballad. Like Tim said, it does set the stage for our third act, if you will. You know, the characters kind of come to the realization that he's wasted a lot of life hating on a season that really had nothing to do with what happened in his life. So this is Scrooge waking up on Christmas morning and throwing the little boy the gold coin to go get the goose around the corner. And that's what I like about it.
All right.
Does it fit in this part of the album? It probably could have come sooner because we probably could have omitted some other tracks that we've already talked about. But overall, I do like it.
Okay. All right. Next track, Christmas Bells, Carousels, and Time. Another little pit stop. It's fine. Tim.
Yeah. It's a transitional piece where the Broadway show would be changing your stage setup for this third act, and the band is just playing to keep the audience from wondering what the hell they're waiting for.
All right, John.
Yeah, what Tim said.
Copy and paste. All right. Next track. What child is this? I'm going to reserve my comments until after. Tim, what do you have to say?
I like this one. I think this is a solid really? Track.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I think when you want to show people what TSO is about and you don't want to just play them Wizards of Winter, I'd actually probably show them this one.
All right. John?
Yeah. I like this one as well, too, because I like the fact that it's another one that paints a picture, and it draws on the manger imagery and some other stuff. And I like that they're using those images in another way. I'm all for kind of twisting things around a little bit and making people look at something different. And I think this one does. This is another one that I actually kind of like.
Okay. Well, I definitely don't like it as much as you guys.
He's a drummer.
Hey, wait a minute now. Well, that being said, time-wise, this song feels every second of 5 minutes and 55 seconds.
It does seem a little long. I'll give you that.
It, and there is a nice change around 3 minutes, but even that goes on for too long. There's just a lot of lyrics to this track, and you're right, there's images in here that are important, but to me, it just... Like I said, this part of the, I mean, I know there's a story. I know they're trying to wrap things up, but this album is so front loaded that when you get here, it's just kind of like the energy is left. And so, and this song does not help.
I kind of get what you're saying there. I feel like this song at this point in the album would probably have been better served if they had omitted some of those other filler right. tracks earlier on, mm-hmm. because this is a long tune. And by the time you get to it in the album, you really are kind of suffering from that ear fatigue and, you know, oh my goodness, this is still going on. But I think if you can separate yourself from that feeling, this is a good song.
All right. All right. Next track, an instrumental of O Come All Ye Faithful. That's easy for me to say.
That's why they made it an instrumental.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's fine. It's just, it's literally another filler track as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. 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 Completely agree there. I feel like the standout acoustic track on this album is Christmas Jazz.
Yeah.
And so this one, it's just kind of there.
Yep. All right.
But again, it's well done. It's well done.
Well, there's nothing on this album that you can't say, oh my God, why did they think they could play that? That sounds horrible.
Right.
You know, everything's well executed. I just don't think everything should have been included.
Right. Yeah. All right. Christmas Canon Rock is actually a reworking of Christmas Canon from the Christmas Attic. The original uses children's choir. This one embraces more guitar and whatever. I personally prefer the first version, Christmas Canon. And once again, this song to me feels every bit of its 5 minute runtime. I will say I like her voice. It's just too repetitive. There is some good guitar work towards the end, but you know, it does not save the song for me. Tim?
You know, this one is a staple of the live show these days. And you know, they don't bring a children's choir on tour with them. They let the female singers take right. over here. And like I said, it's a staple of the live show, and you can see why when you're listening to it. It's got everything that a TSO song should have, and it definitely lends itself very well to the pyro and the lasers and the live setup.
All right, John?
Yeah, it's definitely one that is better live than recorded.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll have to go see them live because
absolutely
it will change your opinion on some of these songs. Right. Quite honestly, it will. Yeah.
If nothing else, there are several decent live shows that were recorded entirely mm-hmm. on YouTube. Look some of them up.
All right.
Yeah. They actually have a special. They have their own YouTube channel running through the end of the month, I believe, and they have their professionally shot. And I use the word professionally in air quotes because it's really dated. but it's the first album. They have it from start to finish.
Okay.
And it features Ozzy Davis as the narrator of the song, of the album. All right. This album would benefit, I think, from something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Where we could see some stuff to go along with the visuals. Cause probably like everyone else that I've already mentioned, I didn't know there was a narrated version of this album until like a week ago.
Yeah.
And I think this is one that if it was done in a, visually from front to end, from front to be end, it would be much more fulfilling and I'd probably like it a lot more.
That's fair. All right, next track, Different Wings. Tim, thoughts?
I like the vocal on this one. I think she's got a great voice. This is just a nice, sweet ballad. I like this one.
All right, John?
Yeah, again, nice, sweet ballad. Nothing super duper standout about it, but again, quality work. And again, let's just see how long we can stretch in this album out.
yeah. Well, and that's my point. Cause to me, I'm like, okay, I know we're telling a story, but let's get to the final piece. So
damn it. We paid for a month in the studio. We're spending a month in the studio.
Right.
We are getting our money's worth out of this.
All right. Next track, Midnight Clear. Tim.
This, it's not the track that I would have picked to close this one. If I'm ordering this album, I would have swapped this and Midnight Clear, or I would have swapped Midnight Clear for Different Wings, or I would have just omitted Midnight Clear entirely. I don't think needs to be here. I don't think it's a good closer to the album. I think Different Wings wraps this up a lot neater.
Yeah. John?
Yep. I'd have to agree with that.
It's
Different Wings is a strong ending point. This just seems like this seems like the pointless after credit scene.
Yeah, they kind of just tacked it on. Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. I would it's fine, but there's nothing here to make it worth being here. It's just when we're we got this recorded, let's just tack it on here. So
yeah,
I feel like there's no gonna be like director's cut version of this album. They put everything on here. Yeah, it's all there.
They certainly did.
And unfortunately, I think we've all three shot ourselves in the foot of ever getting on the guest list of a TSO show.
Yeah, that's why I tried to apologize at the onset, because someday I want to be that guy in the audience when somebody's guitar goes down and they say, "Tim, get up here. We need you." You know.
Yeah. Yeah, restring this.
Here, put this in the case while we get the backup guitarist ready.
Right.
Damn it.
Okay, so before we move on, we're going to take a minute and hear from our friends at Doom Generation.
Did you grow up with a lack of parental supervision? Do you know all the lyrics to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? Remember Mayor McCheese and the Fry Guys? Have an inexplicable love for the California Raisins? Can you remember Madonna's original phase? Then you might be a part of the Doom Generation. Laugh until you cry with us each week as we stumble blindly through the memories of the movie and other random things that doomed us to be the salty, sarcastic, sardonic ladies you want to hang with. You know us. You love us. You can't f***ing live without us. Doom Generation. Available everywhere you find podcasts.
Okay, we're back. So if you're paying attention earlier in the episode and our last TSO episode, we mentioned the band Sabotage quite a bit. So I asked these guys here to come up with a song or two that they would recommend to a TSO fan to give a listen and hear kind of the roots of where TSO came from. So Tim, what tracks do you recommend people take a listen to?
Well, first off, this was nowhere in my notes for preparation.
What?
It wasn't?
We stumped him.
No, but I can do this very easily. I can do this very easily. Going to give them When the Crowds Are Gone.
All right. Yep.
Oh, good choice.
Yes.
That is When the Crowds Are Gone leads straight to Streets. And from Streets, you get to Christmas Eve Sarajevo. And then you get to TSO. And I think there's just a straight linear progression from that song. You play that tune for them, they understand what TSO is going to be.
All right. That's fair. John, thoughts?
Yeah, that's a strong choice. Cause I was going to say to listen to Streets, because Streets is, I didn't have a ton of Sabotage. You guys were more the Sabotage guys and kind of got me into them. And I think the only album of theirs that I ever actually physically owned was Streets.
Right.
And I love it because it is a concept album. So you can you can see how that morphed into TSO. There's some great tracks on there, like Jesus Saves was one I was listening to this afternoon.
Right.
You can hear the birth of TSO in that.
I think it's Believe on Streets.
Yes.
Yeah, that the breakdown, the I forget if it's the chorus or the bridge or something in there, but that never wanted to go, always wanted to stay.
Yes,
straight out of When the Crowds Are Gone. When the Crowds Are Gone is Streets in a single song.
Right. And Believe is my favorite song on Streets. I love that song. And that is definitely the
lyrics to When the Crowds Are Gone are probably my favorite lyrics to almost any song. I would put that up there with the greats of all time for me.
All right. Now, the couple songs I want to mention, one is off Gutter Ballet. It's called Summer's Rain. I really like that song. It's a strong song. And I think you can hear some of the, you know, songwriting that later would go into the TSO stuff. And then Strange Wings off the album Hall of the Mountain King is another good track to give a listen to if you want to go back and kind of hear, TSO would come from. It's kind of roots. And I think those are two good songs. But When the Crowds Are Gone, I was going to mention, but I figured somebody else would mention it too. Streets is definitely a great concept album. And I mean, it's literally called Streets, a rock opera, and which is exactly what Paul O'Neill wanted with TSO. And you can see that for sure. So, but yeah. Just so you do know, we do a Spotify playlist for our musical episodes. So you'll have the entire album of Lost Christmas Eve, plus the songs we just talked about from Sabotage. So you can give it a listen. Okay. It's time to give it a rating. Your choices are Never Again, Stream It, Buy It Used, Buy It New, or Vinyl Worthy. So John, what say you on the rating?
I think it's worth a purchase, either new or used, because it's not a fairly expensive album. And it's definitely worth a purchase if you're a completionist. If you're not a completionist and just a casual fan, then I would say stream it.
All right. I say buy it used because there are some really good tracks on here, and then there's some filler. It's worth having. And I actually picked up a copy of it at Half Price Books for just a few dollars. So it's like I said, there's plenty of good music on here. There's also a lot of filler. So my choice is buy it used. Mr. Brown, what kind of rating are you going to give it?
I'm going to go along with you. It's a buy it used for me. As much as I like TSO, I think all the really great stuff on this album is the stuff you're going to hear in their live show, and you're not going to have to sit through the extra 30 or 40 minutes of filler. Buy it used.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, as always, it's a pleasure discussing music with you guys. So thank you, John.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to the listeners. It means a lot that you take time out of your day and let us invade your space and listen to what a bunch of foolish mortals have to say on a lot of different topics. Reach out to us on social media. We are on Twitter at DockingBay77Pod, on Facebook, DockingBay77Podcast, and you can drop us an email, DockingBay77Podcast@gmail.com. Also, go to Patreon and search DockingBay77, and for as little as $1 a month, you can help offset the cost of the production of this podcast. As I said before, we would love to see a rating, whichever podcast app you use. Please drop in a rating and a review. and let us know if you do so, and we will read it on episode, I promise. Also, share us on social media. Tell your friends, family, and whoever that you're listening to us and that you like us, and we'd love to hear from them too. I hope everyone has a happy and prosperous new year. Enjoy your time with family and friends. And to quote Ferris Bueller, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and take a look around once in a while, you can miss it. Do yourself a favor. Listen to more music. And remember, physical media is better than streaming. The Docking Bay 77 podcast is produced and edited by Dayton Johnson. Recorded with Rode Pod mics, the Zoom PodTrack P4, and edited on Audacity. Opening music provided by Eric Jason Brock. You can find him on YouTube and Bandcamp. Thank you for listening.
He's going to come back with like a clown mask or something on and try and get us.
Clowns don't scare me.
Clowns don't scare me. Marsupials do.